Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss and debate all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notescene@gmail.com. Unfortunately, we will be talking about all the crazy stuff that went down in the scene this week, including allegations against members of Brand New and With Confidence. After that, since the scene is officially canceled this week, we will be talking about the new Taylor Swift record. All right, shall we? I mean, I don't even really know where to begin here. But first, I just want to say, we're not here to be judges. We're not here to accuse anyone of anything. Tyler and I aren't some authority to speak on this. We're not, necessarily even qualified to talk about this. What we're just trying to do today is kind of go through the whirlwind with you that we as fans have all kind of gone through together and just sort of discuss it and see how we got here and see where we are now. So I guess we'll kind of start with Brand New because that was the big one. A woman leveled accusations at Jesse against Brand New on a Facebook post. I'm not going to repeat the allegations that she said against Jesse on this show because you can pretty much read them in any major news outlet from alternative press to Rolling Stone to Pitchfork, just go ahead and Google it. So I'm not gonna, I don't want to talk about the gruesome details, but Tyler, like, where were you and what were you doing when you first got this on your radar, when this first crossed your path?
Yeah, so it was Friday afternoon. I was literally sitting at my desk where I'm sitting at right now, and I was just working like every other Friday, and things were starting to wind down, and I was getting ready to kind of shut down for the weekend. And I just happened to open Twitter, and I saw some people tweeting about Brand New in a context that isn't like when people talk about Brand New on my Twitter feed. And I searched Jesse's name, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was just shock because as, and I'm sure this, you can attest to this, as someone who was a part of 2014 and 2015 when a lot of allegations in our world came out back then, we know what the repercussions are when stuff like this happens. And still now, four days later, it's difficult to process.
Right. And I want to say before we go any further, we support all the victims. Notescene
Absolutely.
does.
Absolutely.
And you were the one who notified me, weren't you?
Yeah.
I got a yep, so I got a text from Tyler, and it was pretty much like thread. Jesse is a creep. Let's talk about it. It was the Facebook post. And I kind of, I didn't see the details, but I kind of instantly knew when you sent it to me. And my heart kind of sank because being in the music industry and knowing things behind the scenes, I've learned a lot of things about Jesse from very credible sources that, well, maybe aren't like illegal things. I've learned about some pretty terrible things he's done that I would think only a sociopath could do. So I wouldn't say I was surprised by this necessarily, but it definitely stung. Like
That was the big part.
it really hurt. It was a gut punch to see.
It's weird for me because we have three episodes of this show that we've done where we're basically just praising this band, calling them the best band in the scene. And now Jesse has allegedly done these despicable things.
It's tough to have an opinion on this,
For
especially at
sure.
this tense moment, because if you're not immediately saying you're going to burn all your Brand New records, there's a group online that's going to attack you. If you're not, if you do say you're going to burn all your Brand New records, there's another group that's going to attack you. There's a lot of savagery going on right now, and I think it's okay if you don't know where you stand on the band and everything right now, because
sure.
I don't know that I do. Like, I'm super upset and I'm super hurt by this, and right now I don't know. But so to get to kind of the newsy part of it, so that Facebook post, I mean, it really just took off in a way we haven't, like, the accusations were posted on Facebook in a thread and they just blew up, and eventually ended up getting covered by the blogs, right, Tyler?
Yeah, and it was the part that I thought was crazy, how fast it spread. It happened in a closed Facebook group. Like, you have to be accepted into this group, but people just took screenshots immediately, and it seemed like within a few hours it was trending on Twitter.
And then other girls started to come out, and it was just kind of over. And then so Jesse then releases a statement on Facebook. And keep in mind, this is the first time we've heard from Jesse in like 10 years.
A decade. Yep.
Dude does not do statements. And it's a well-typed out and thought-out apology. And it's very long and I would say sincere sounding, but the issue with it is it doesn't specifically address the allegations or the alleged victim. That is sort of diving into the comments of that, which, why'd I do that, is what I picked up is most people are very angry that, you know, it's he didn't directly address what he did wrong.
That was my biggest thing reading it through for the first time. And I went back and read it through 3 times before I did anything else. And just to see if I had missed anything, I couldn't believe that, you know, I kept waiting for him to address where it all, like, the allegations, like, where it all came from. Because if he didn't do it, he wouldn't be saying anything, you know? Like,
there's
that aspect. And that aspect in and of itself, I think, deserves and demands a response from him. You know, he goes on and says that he's working on his narcissism, but he writes 7 paragraphs about himself.
Right.
It just, he totally skirted the issue at hand, and I didn't think that was right at all, and I do not think that's an adequate statement.
It's a good point, but the thing, when you read this statement, I see legal all over.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Like, it was looked over by a lawyer.
This isn't Jesse. This is Jesse, his manager, his publicist, the band's legal counsel was involved. And it's an attempt to apologize. It's a PR move without directly incriminating himself.
For sure.
Because that's what your lawyer is going to advise you to do. No one's going to ever directly incriminate themselves.
One of the biggest aspects, I mean, there's so many different facets to this story. And one of the biggest thing is that Brand New is in such a unique position, as we talk about from the band itself, like when they were releasing new music, they never say anything. They turn away interviews, whereas most bands, you know, take any press that they can get. So Brand New have built themselves up as this entity that really doesn't exist, especially Jesse himself. So that was going to be my question to you. Did you think that we were going to get a statement from Jesse at all?
You know, no, I didn't think we would get a statement. Like you said, he doesn't really exist. He's created himself in that way where he could just sort of have faded away. But so doubling back now to the news. So after he puts out the statement, Martha, the opening band, which, by the way, they have a tour coming up at this point, which is insane to think about. I think Thursday would have been the first tour date in the UK and Europe. But Martha, the opening band, drop off the tour pretty much immediately, right?
Yep.
And so then Kevin Devine, who, Tyler, I believe is touring with them as a touring member right now.
Yep. He was opening the shows.
Okay. He initially posted a statement that was kind of like, you know, I'm horrified by these allegations and I support the victim and I'm going to do my best to, you know, do the best that I can for this community and stuff. But he didn't drop off the tour initially. And I think, I don't know if he got backlash for that or what happened, but maybe a couple hours later, Kevin Devine comes out and drops off the tour. which I thought that was interesting, how he, initially he wasn't going to in his first statement, and then a couple hours later, I don't know if the heat built up or what, but he decided to drop off the tour.
I genuinely believe because I couldn't believe that Brand New didn't address the shows in Jesse's statement. Like, I was expecting them to cancel everything. Anything that they had planned would be canceled right off the bat.
It was very cocky and bold for them not to cancel the tour in that statement.
Absolutely. I couldn't believe it. So with Kevin releasing two statements of his own, and in the first one, he's not talking about the shows at all, it makes me believe that even when they dropped that first statement, Jesse did, they were planning on doing those shows.
Yeah, that's what I figured. And but so what happens, and man, dude, God, I've been going in the Facebook groups, Deja on Tinder, and even the Defend Pop Punk group, mm-hmm. It has just been war.
Absolutely.
Like, knife fighting back and forth of, like, fuck you for supporting this band in any way. And then there's people like, fuck you, you know, for having these tattoos. There were people threatening people who weren't going to cover up their Brand New tattoos. There were wars over Brand New tattoos. I mean, it was crazy. People were like, no, you need to get that shit covered. It's just been a knife fight online and social media. And it's turned into, now there's conspiracy theories and social media investigations. They're really turning up the victim blaming card here, and they're really digging into these victims as much as they can, and that's never, you know, that's never good to see. But
no,
it's sort of the nature of the internet. So that's just been a knife fight in there. But so Brand New eventually does cancel the tour, which is the correct move, because you think about it, the first date would have been this Thursday. Holy shit, can you imagine them taking the stage?
That's where my head was going after I read Jesse's statement. I'm like, they're really going to play a show this Thursday. Like, not even less than a week later, after all these breaks, and Jesse's going to go on stage, and this band's going to play like nothing happened.
And this is a really dark time for the scene. And this has been a really shitty and exhausting and stressful thing to go through. And like I said, like, I don't like talking about this stuff. It just brings me down. And like, I'm thankful that I have a friend like Tyler that like I can talk to about this every hour and vent to, and we can kind of go through it together as friends. And, you know, I'm aware that not everybody has like a friend like that. Like, when you can go back and look when we launched Note to Scene, even our original press release, the original articles written about us, I said in there, you know, one of our missions was to provide that conversation about the scene that some people don't have, because, you know, growing up in high school, I didn't have anybody I could talk to about these bands. So many people don't even know that this scene exists, mm-hmm. you know, and that was what we wanted Note to Scene to be, was to give you a conversation like this to be a part of. And so that's really why we're talking about this today, because we all just went through it together. We're not trying to like exploit drama for headlines or anything like that at all.
Absolutely not. No, I think, you know, we're talking about this because it's important. And I think in order to process this as music fans, you have to talk about it. And I'm glad that we have this kind of platform that we can discuss these things with. And we have, you know, people write into us every week. And I think that's really cool. And just like you, I mean, I grew up in the middle of nowhere and I didn't have anyone to talk to about anything alternative press, Warped Tour, in high right. school or middle school or anything like that. And that's why we started this show. So, like, you know, like you said, we're not here to capitalize off anyone's situation whatsoever for downloads or anything like that. It's just, we have to talk about some things whether we want to or not. And to be completely honest, I don't want to talk about this.
But here we are. These bands have kind of forced our hand, because it wasn't just Jesse. This became a whirlwind of just insanity and dumpster fires everywhere. Not long after Jesse, allegations begin to surface all over social media about Austin. I think you know which Austin I'm talking about. Trying not to get sued here, fam, so don't be mad at me. But allegations that have been around for a very long time, and are pretty bad. Those started to go around, so it's like you have another megastar. The same night, basically, those allegations are all over social media. They don't sort of make that critical jump, though, the way the allegations towards Jesse did. Whereas when Jesse, you know, puts out a statement, all of a sudden Rolling Stone, Pitchfork, The Daily Beast, Consequence of Sound, you know, Alternative Press, all the mainstream outlets are covering it, and even the blogs. But these Austin situations have not been covered at all by any publication. And I think with that, there's a lot of fear out there of legal stuff in that nature. And I think you can even hear it in my voice right now. So that's kind of where we are at that. Those are just sort of swirling around social media. They've been known about for a long time. And it's to be seen where that's going to head.
This dates back as far as 2010 with Attack. They released a statement back then alleging these things against this person. And it's just been, every time I get on Twitter, I don't even want to go on Twitter anymore because of every time I go on, I see something new. And it just absolutely breaks my heart. And to go back to the victim blaming, that breaks my heart even more. Like, we really need to come together and support these victims, because if anything like what's being alleged had happened to you or someone you know, your heart would be turned around in an instant.
And you go back to Brand New, you think about this woman, just kind of how brave she was. Just
absolutely.
Think about Brand New's fan base. Like, that's a crazy, rabid fan base. And to know you're going up against that fan base, it's a brave thing to do. It's a scary thing to do, to even, you know, try to take down, you know, these people consider him a god. And circling back around back to Austin, it's another tough situation. Like you said, if back Attack said it, you know, when they kicked him out, they said the same thing back then. You can go back and read their blog post about it. Girls have came out, girls have been silenced. And so we'll see where that one goes. But, you know, and then it got even crazier, because I'm not even going to name this person because this is so old. Like, some old shit came up about a really famous musician from a really famous band. And, you know, if you really want, you can look into it. But this was some old shit. And it's just so old and it's unverifiable that I can't name anything here because I just, you know, you can't be sure. But that was the moment where I just started to, like, it was like I saw the Matrix. It was Black Mirror. You know, I was like, okay, the Matrix is failing. The Truman Show, we've all been living a lie. Maybe, you know, everything in the scene has been built on a lie and everything's burning down.
When I saw those tweets about that person, I was, it was about 1 a.m., I think, on Saturday night, and I was having, like, an existential crisis sitting on my couch. It's just, like, we've kind of built our lives around these bands, and
I believe we declared the death of the scene that night. Is that around when we did that?
11-11-17, time of death.
R.I.P. What goes on the tombstone? The quiet things no one ever knows?
Oh, my God. Too soon, man. Too soon. It's just like I was saying, we built our lives around these bands, and if you're a fan of underground music, you know what that's like. Like, these bands kind of, they're your muse. I mean, to an extent, all entertainment is escapism, but when you're a fan of underground music, and if you've ever liked a band from the Warped Tour or Alternative Press scene, you're diehard. This is it. Like, this is, you support these bands with all that you have, and to know that it was all kind of built along with things that you and I and our listeners obviously don't agree with is very disheartening.
So we think, I think I gave you some calming words that night, Tyler, and we went to bed, and we think it's all over. It's going to blow over, maybe, you know, the scene will reset itself. Everything will be, the ship will right, you know, justice will happen. And I wake up to an alert that new allegations are being stated on social media against, with confidence, their guitarist, Luke, and Hysteria magazine, which they have all the details there if you want to read about the allegations. They're a really good Australian publication. They got all the fucking screenshots, man. If you want to see them, they got them all. But new allegations were published there against him. And, you know, I sort of, it was like, whoa, here we are right in the morning. We're getting going again. Another band. I kind of couldn't believe it. Shouts, big shouts to Knucklepuck. And I know we've given Knucklepuck a hard time on this show for their music, but big shouts to Knucklepuck for they just kicked that band off the tour, off their American tour, so fast. Like, I don't even think Hysteria had published their article. It couldn't have been more than 5 minutes that Knucklepuck were like, with confidence or off the tour. Mm-hmm. You know, they mm-hmm. did that so fast.
Absolutely, yeah. Massive props to them, because they are managed by a person who's associated with the Brand New Situation. And knowing right. that person, I just like...
He's, you know, he saw what happened with Brand New. I believe he's their label manager. He saw, and now this happens with Knucklepuck. And I think he was sort of like, distance yourself.
Hell you no, know? Like, man. Hell
no.
No
more of this shit.
Right.
No more of this bullshit. So... Knucklepuck kicked the band off before that. Before the band could even
release
the right move,
right?
Before they could release a statement and make the right move, which they eventually did, which was kicking Luke out of the band. So, and they, to the band's credit, with confidence, they kicked Luke out pretty damn quick. I mean, it was within a half an hour to an hour, but Knucklepuck were just just hella quick. Like, Knucklepuck gave them no time.
Absolutely. And they had a new tour flyer up, like, within the next hour. I mean, it was like, a completely rebranded tour.
Shouts to Joe and the guys. Good work there and their management team. I think that, you know... It made a statement, you know.
Absolutely.
The band really, Knucklepuck, big shouts, because they really made a statement, like, no toleration for anything.
They're not
and
here to ignore it and hope it goes away.
And just thinking back to that the magazine story about it and seeing all the screenshots of private messages, I just got to say this real quick. No more bands, if you're listening. I know musicians listen, and I know a lot of industry people listen. So tell your bands this. No more private messaging with fans.
No more.
It's done. It's over. And, it's just not appropriate anymore. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work. And lines get blurred, and there's no reason to put yourself in that situation as a musician anymore. There's no excuse for it. Any interactions you have with a fan, especially a girl, if you're a guy, these are the cases we're seeing where these young girls are finding themselves in positions of being harassed and things of that nature by band dudes. You are not allowed to private message girls anymore as a band. I think that is a new standard that we need to set. Any interactions with your fans have to be public on Twitter or public on Facebook. You know, you can't do it in the shadows anymore. Managers, publicists, label heads, I call upon you to hold your bands to that standard. No more private messaging with the girls. It's done. It's over.
Absolutely.
I'm done reading the screenshots. I'm done seeing the ugliness.
It's ridiculous at this point.
It's inappropriate, and it's time to end.
The first point should be, why the hell are you messaging these girls in the first place?
Right.
Like, it's inappropriate in and of itself, whether or not you're doing anything wrong. Like,
true.
These band bros are abusing their power status, and it's sickening, man.
Yeah. So... fires everywhere. The scene's burning down. Allegations come out, like, same day against We Came as Romans, Kyle, the singer. There's another thing we had to deal with that I believe chorus.fm posted that story up.
They were the first one to post, and then All Punked Up post, and I believe PRP just post.
PRP did post recently, you're right. Okay. And Chorus, that is the website run by Jason Tate, formerly known as AbsolutePunk.net, just developing now. Allegations are swirling everywhere against Mike from Pierce the Veil and Johnny Craig. And this is all, like, just kind of breaking. and it's everywhere, and our scene is burning down.
The ship is really sinking, man, and if the light looked dim before, it certainly looks dimmer now, and it's just difficult to process it all, because honestly, I can't even keep up at this point.
It's just like that Hollywood thing that just happened where all the directors got ousted, but I kind of thought we already did this before.
We
already went through it with Front Porch Step and all that, and I thought we were ahead of the curve there. Like, I thought we had beat all these other industries to it, and we were already doing our purge. That wasn't the case, and here we are, and everything's burning down. Real quick, before we move on, you know, Tyler and I, we get a lot of emails from our female listeners with questions and stuff, and we appreciate that, and that's really fun. But if you have a story of this nature, you know, an encounter with a band dude that you want to share, it's unfortunately Tyler and I are not the best people to send that to, because, you know, we're not reporters anymore. We don't work for a publication, so there's really not much we can do to help you there. However, fortunately, one of our OG listeners, Lucy Westcott, is a fierce reporter for Newsweek. She's worked in areas of women's rights, and she has let us know that any of our listeners who have any stories that they need to share can contact her. And so if you have anything of that nature, I would highly advise you to reach out to her. She's part of the Note Scene family. She's a very warm person, a very effective reporter, and I think that's a good way for you to go. You could just Google Lucy Westcott. She's the first one who comes up. Her DMs are open for you. She told me that, and we'll throw her email in the show notes. But let's wash that dirty taste out of our mouth.
Man, we got a 180 it, man.
Yeah, we got a 180 hard, and let's move on to our pop story this week, which is Taylor Swift. She released her new album, Reputation, one of the few bright spots we got this week.
Right.
So first, Tyler, I kind of just want to talk about our experience, because this record has been just so built up. You know, we've been talking about it on the show, and so I first want to talk about our experiences buying it, because we both bought this, which is a rare thing that you and I both bought physical media at the same time. So what was it like for you buying this record, Tyler?
So I went out on release day because I needed, it was the day that the Jesse story broke and I had to get away from the internet. So I was actually very thankful that I had this that I could look forward to, because straight up, this is the biggest release of the year in music. I went to my local Target because they've had a big deal with Taylor and this whole campaign. It was the biggest pre-order in the store's history of music, of selling pre-orders.
Like 400,000 or something like that?
Yeah, it was right around that number. And I was just interested to see what it was like inside the Target store. I walk in, Taylor is right there, literally at the front. And in my store, the music's all the way in the back.
Not so, Taylor Swift, Taylor's media.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There were end caps, there were magazines everywhere. Pretty much at every checkout you could either pick up a magazine or a CD, and the magazines are like the special edition, which I'm sure Matt you're going to talk about because you bought those. But I just bought the regular version of the CD, which was really cool, because although I was a little pissed I paid $15 for it, it's very well put together. And it comes in a sleeve, and you roll it out of the sleeve, and the sleeve's made like from really, it's very durable. It doesn't feel super cheap like a lot of other Scene albums feel like when you buy them. Mm-hmm. And then you slide out the CD case, and a poster comes out with it, which is cool, double-sided poster. And then you open up the CD, and there's this really hefty lyric booklet, and I'm a sucker for lyric booklets. I love reading everything from the lyrics to the liner notes to the thank yous. And Taylor actually wrote a letter at the beginning of this booklet, just kind of defining like what Reputation means to her and kind of why she called the album that. And I thought that was really cool.
Very cool. I gotta say too, the cover art, it is very cool in person. Like, I know that that album art, when it was first, digitally, it just didn't translate well, and it was made fun of a lot. But when you see it as a piece of physical media, it is a very cool cover. Like, I think it's going to look cool on vinyl.
Absolutely. I loved seeing it in the store. I was like, wow, that actually looks really good. And it stood out. And it's crazy because it's black and white, but it's very striking when you see it in person. So I bought it, and it felt cool to me because I grew up buying CDs and in bulk, basically. You know, you go out on release day, which used to be Tuesdays, and I'd have my mom drive me to Best Buy or Target or something, and I'd buy like 3 CDs of the 3 scene bands that came out, and I saved any stickers that were on them, and you opened it, and it was an experience just opening stuff, and it was just cool, like, unboxing this for me. I just had a cool experience with that. But you had a little bit of a different experience because you went a little further than I did, Matt, and I was very surprised to see you to see that text message Saturday morning.
Yes, I was pretty stoked, wasn't I? I was texting a lot of people. Okay, so I was driving, and I was driving by Target, and I was like, "Fuck it," you know. I turned in there because Taylor had announced that, you know, she was selling these special magazine editions of the album, where you get a whole print zine with the album, and I just thought it was such a cool concept. I had to go check it out, and walking into Target, I had pretty much decided I was going to buy one, and I looked at them, and there were 2 volumes actually of them, and I was going to buy one originally, and I left Target buying both volumes because I had to have them both, and they're really cool. You know, I would say it's less of a magazine and more of like a coffee table book, like a collectible sort of item. Very glossy, nice, thick pages with, you know, a good finish, hardbound cover, great photos. Some of the stuff in them you get with it is like paintings that Taylor did, poems Taylor wrote, little statements from Taylor, photos of her personal life this past year, Polaroids she's kind of manipulated with makeup in a cute way, handwritten messages and lyrics, and thick too, like 72 pages each, I think. I just thought it was really cool and sort of a testament to where physical media can go. And like, I know it's a cliche thing to say, but bands take note. Like, this got people in stores to buy physical media. This got me. And if you've been listening to the show for a while, and Tyler knows this, I do not buy physical media. I am just all about my Spotify, all about my streaming. I've thrown away all my CDs. I have nothing left. The last CD I bought was The Word Alive's Empire in like 2009. So that's how done I am with physical media. I'm all about, you know, streaming. But it was interesting. I was talking to Mike Shea, the owner of Alternative Press, and my old boss. After reading these Taylor magazines, I sent him a message. I was like, "Hey, Mike, I think you should check out Taylor Swift's new magazine album combo, because it really showed me some inspiring things of where I think print and artists can go in the future." And he texted me a picture of the magazine right back, and he's like, "Dude, crazy timing. I literally just bought it, and I'm like leaving Target," and I was like, "Holy shit!" And so, like, shouts to Mike for like being on point. You know what I mean? Like, here
he's
I am
so
thinking
out
I'm
there.
Dude's on point. Dude knows. You know, like, here I am thinking I'm about to make a suggestion to him, and he's already got it. You know, he's already out there.
Mad shouts.
Absolutely. Shouts to Mike. So just pretty cool. You know, it was a very cool experience. I actually did listen to the album and read the magazines at the same time, and it was a very fun experience. Cool. One of the most interesting things about it is I realized the selling point of these magazines was not the music. It was Taylor's disappearance. Taylor had disappeared for the last year, and we hadn't seen or heard from her. And everything she's sort of been through in the last year is captured in these magazines. And it's an interesting way that she's sort of monetized her just mere living and being, you know, like she's taken this year of her life that we didn't get to see, put it into a magazine and sold it. And here I am. I paid $40 for Taylor Swift album, essentially. You know, that's 4 months of Spotify for me. And,
absolutely.
She got me. It was so great. She got me.
It felt good to be excited about something again.
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing for me. And I think it's awesome and hilarious that you spent $40 on this Taylor album.
Right? Very satisfied customer though over here. Really enjoyed it. So, okay, so let's talk about the actual music now, Tyler.
Cool, yeah. So I'm gonna start with So It Goes. It's track number 7. It falls almost exactly in the middle of the album. And this is definitely one of, if not my favorite track on the entire record. Sonically, I just fell instantly in love with this song. It's very ethereal, it's very ambient, and we've never really seen Taylor in that atmosphere before, especially in her pop world. This song kind of makes you feel like you're floating, and I just, the entire concept and the idea that Taylor could be versatile enough to do something like this and pull off a track like this was very interesting to me. And as I was listening to the song, I'm just like, she absolutely nails it. And thematically, she goes into a bit of uncharted territory. The song's basically just about sex. And I thought that in and of itself was interesting because Taylor is usually the family-friendly artist. And, middle America, that's where she built her fan base at. So for her to touch on some risque topics on this album, this isn't the only song that she does it on. I thought that was interesting of itself. But love this song. It's definitely one that I'm continually, ever since I heard it, have been revisiting. What about you? What are your thoughts on the song?
I really enjoy this song. This
Cool.
is a Lorde moment. There
It
are a lot of
absolutely.
Lorde moments on this album, which I will probably point out as we go along, and I'm okay with that because it's almost like this is kind of like a pure heroine part two moment, and I really do enjoy this song. It's like a 7.5 out of 10 for me. Like Tyler said, it's pretty much about sex. I'll leave the lyric scratches down your back. That comes up quite a bit, and we'll
Right.
just let that lyric hang and speak for itself.
Right, absolutely. I got like early Halsey vibes from it. Very
Okay.
like very lofty sound. It's building
Yeah.
up tension throughout the verses, and then it just releases it in the chorus, and I love that formula. I'm a sucker
Very
for it.
vibey.
Yeah,
Very, very
definitely.
vibey,
Sets
and
a mood.
you know me in mood tracks. I'm just like
Oh
all about
yeah.
the mood tracks.
Yep.
Okay. So a standout song for me was Endgame, the second track on the
Nice.
album. So the lyric comes up, big reputation, you and me, we got big reputations, and you heard about me, I got some big enemies. And that was the moment, track two, where I was fully in on this album. Like, I don't know what it was about that lyric and the sound and the sonics around it, but it just put reputation fully into perspective for me as soon as I heard this song, and I felt this warm, great feeling, and I was just totally in. And it even made Ready for It, track one, make like way more sense to me after hearing this. And I like that song like 3 times better than I originally did now. I love that song, and it's basically the de facto title track of the record, and I like when artists do that, when they have a title track where, she says reputation in it as in the chorus, but it's not named reputation. I think that's a cool move to do. And it's basically this 90s R&B blend with Bionic Taylor, who and Bionic Taylor is sort of who we see throughout the first half of this record in songs like Ready for It and Look What You Made Me Do and Don't Blame Me.
Definitely.
Future guest here, who is one of my favorite rappers, and I think he absolutely crushes this verse. Future is usually a very his flow is very groggy, very drugged out, very spacey, very distant. For this, it's almost like Taylor required him to be sober for this because you almost don't recognize him. He's so fast and so on point. Like, I thought it was Young Thug for a sec. I had to look up. I was like, am I sure this is Future? Because he's just so awake. And I don't mind Ed Sheeran's verse on this.
Man, you're gonna give Ed a back.
And I usually don't, man. I
I
don't, but
know.
I really like he kind of kills it a little bit, like low key. It kind of cooks
Wow.
his verse. And so I was okay with that. And my favorite lyric on this song, I'm just going to say it, and then we can move on, is I bury hatchets, but I keep maps of where I put them.
She's just a savage on this album at some moments, man. Like she's just dragging her enemies. And I think we'll talk about the overall themes later, but you're right. Like she killed it on that lyric. But real quick, I just want to say about this song, the pre-chorus, man. Oh my God. It's just like it hooked me just like the one on Are You Ready For It? we see throughout this entire album the dichotomy between light and dark Taylor, and that's kind of how she is in real life. That's how she portrays herself. She can be a bit of a, you know, pressing figure that can get stuff done and pressure streaming services to pay artists and have a lot of pull, and she can also be this lovable, lighthearted figure towards her fans. And to see that dichotomy throughout the entire album, but also on this track, especially in the pre-chorus, which is a total, like, it's a dark 1989 moment, and I think that's my favorite parts of this album, is when there are dark 1989 moments, and that pre-chorus has been stuck in my head since
Friday. it feels like she's having so much fun on this track, which I love.
Really?
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, as she's singing that chorus, can't you just picture her, like, in a driving car with her middle finger out the window, just singing it, like, smiling, like, she just, no fucks. I love it.
Absolutely. And it doesn't feel forced on this song. The only caveat I have with Are You Ready For It, and I have come around to love that song even more, the quote-unquote rap moments that she does, she's not really rapping, but it's the essence of rap, I guess. It feels forced there to me at certain areas. This song feels probably the most natural thing she's ever done, and I was not expecting it at all, especially when the instrumentals, for, like you said, the 90s R&B part, and she absolutely nails it, and I really do. I love this track.
Yeah, totally, and it totally put Ready For It into a new light for me, and I think Ready For It is now, like, my favorite song on the album. Like, it's a crusher, but what is another standout track for you, Tyler Sharp?
So the other track I'll talk about is, I think it's going to be a deep cut. I think this song is going to get overlooked, and I'm kind of disappointed in that. But it's Dancing With Our Hands Tied. It's track number 11 on the album, so it's a little deep. But this song is probably the most simple pop song that has been released in 2017. And that's part of the reason why I love it. But the other part of the reason why I love it...
Well, let's be clear. This is her style over substance moment.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
It's earned. She has given us so much substance on this album that let her have her fun style over substance track.
Thematically, there's nothing special about this song. But sonically, and the way she delivers vocally, it's a high point for me for this record. The tempo, like I was saying, you can compare this song to a pop punk song, because in pop music, especially in the current EDM top 40 era that we're living in, there aren't really fast, quick tempos. And this isn't a quick tempo, but it's faster than most of what we're seeing in pop music today. And she absolutely nails it. And we've got these kind of, you know, piano string moments in the background that kind of tie it all in together. And I just see this in almost like a video of her driving on, like, Sunset Boulevard or something. Like, that's the vibe this song gets me. And yeah, like you said, the lyrics, nothing really to write home about, but it doesn't even matter to me because I love the song sonically.
We got plenty of good lyrics on this album. Right. So for me, I like this song because it shows off her versatility. This really is the odd one out on the album. It's the one that doesn't fit both thematically and sonically on this album. It has its own sound. To me, it's very New York Fashion Week sounding to me. Like, I can see models strolling down the runway to this song, and I think we will see that. I can hear it being played at expensive hair salons, or when you're taking your girlfriend to Sephora, you're going to hear this. It's that kind of song, just that uppity vibe. And it's fun, and I really appreciate it.
Definitely. Yeah, I like that word. It's a fun track. Even though it has a dark moment, you can still consider it fun.
So my next pick for a standout track is This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. This is the fun one. This is like the Bad Blood bop. This is one of Taylor's secret weapons, is the fun chanting chorus. And it always ends up, you know, being one of her number one hits. You heard it in Bad Blood. You heard it in We're Never Getting Back Together. And this song that is her direct shot at Kanye. And on this song, she is literally talking to Kanye like he is a child. She says, you know, this is why we can't have nice things, darling, because you break them. I had to take them away. It's just bar after bar after bar on here of her just owning Kanye. You know, she says, friends don't try to trick you and get you on the phone, which is referring to the drama she had where Kim Kardashian recorded a conversation between her and Kanye, okaying the song Famous. And it ultimately outed Taylor as a liar after she gave her big Grammy speech about not okaying the song and Kanye trying to tear her down and kind of how we got to this whole album in the first place. And she says, you know, so I took an axe to a mended fence, which is starting up the beef again. Another lyric she says is, but I'm not the only friend you've lost lately if you weren't so shady. And here she's referring clearly to Jay-Z, who is another high-profile friend that Kanye has lost. But the KO lyric on this Kanye West diss track to me is, here's a toast to my real friends, because it's so genius, because it's a double cross reference between Kanye's song Runaway, which has the chorus of let's have a toast to the assholes, toast to the douchebags, and his new song Real Friends. So she combines them, boom, here's a toast to my real friends in one lyric. And right at that point, I'm like, oh my God, she just buried Kanye. And I'm the biggest Kanye fan. Yeah. What a wildly fun song.
I didn't like this song at all. I thought it was way too obnoxious. And it's a song that's outside of her realm. Like, as a musician and as a songwriter, it's too far out of the box for her to pull off. And I know I don't even think I appreciate it thematically, because she's still just punching down, and I don't like that, which is what we talked about when Look What You Made Me Do dropped. But sonically, like, this song is pretty annoying to me. I don't like that hook. I think it just feels so forced, and it's like she couldn't just let it go with Look What You Made Me Do. She had to have this all-out track.
And that's what I love about it. This is the napalm assault. Like, Look What You Made Me Do is just the teaser.
Right.
I mean, she goes in here, and this is your bad blood. You know, bad blood was for Katie. This is your bad blood for Kanye. You know, it's a similar style song, and it's just an all-out assault. And it leaves Kanye in this position where, like, his next album, I mean, it has to just be titled Fuck Taylor, yo. I mean, what other option does he have after a track like this just lights him up?
Yeah, I just think this was really unnecessary, and it was total theme over actual substance. And you were totally right with the Lord feel, but it feels more like melodrama Lord, which is what Jack Antonoff infected. And he infected this song as well. He's the only other songwriter besides Taylor credited on this track, which I thought was interesting. I just don't think it's that good of a song. I think it can be fun in the right context, but
I think it's very similar to Bad Blood. That's the through line I draw here. I think it's
Bad
purposely
Blood was
similar.
A battle anthem.
You take those two choruses though, you know, and they're very similar. That Taylor chant.
Yeah. I wish this was more of an anthem though. That was an anthem, man. Bad Blood is like an undeniable pop song.
The pettiness you were talking about. I have decided that, you know, I like villain Taylor better than I like fake nice Taylor.
I'm totally glad that the poptimism era is over, and she could have this image and this aesthetic about her that is darker, but she could take on so much bigger things. She won. Like, she definitely didn't win.
Yeah,
she got
washed.
She totally lost. She totally lost. Yeah. And that's okay to acknowledge that.
Kanye, she got washed, and that stuck with her.
But ultimately, she's bigger.
You're saying there are bigger fish to fry out there for her.
Maybe not even that, but just the fact that her stature as an artist is bigger
than
both.
Just show us your voting card, Taylor. Release the voting card.
I'm not even going there. I'm not even going there. I'm just saying she's bigger than both of them anyways, so what the hell does it matter to her that she took an L? Like, I know we're petty people in 2017, and millennials are just, you know, they're out to save their image, but I don't think she necessarily had anything. Her castle didn't crumble overnight.
Yeah, but we often in life, little things happen and we make a bigger deal of them than they are, you know?
Do you think that's what this entire era is?
Something tiny can happen and it ruins your week, you know? And I think there's this really poignant quote that, like, actually kind of moved me from the, did you read her little intro on the album she wrote?
Yep. Okay.
She says, we are all mosaics of our best selves and our worst selves. existing somewhere between our well-lit profile photo and our driver's license shot. That's so interesting to me. Like, I wanted her to make 1989 again, you know, and not be petty, but she didn't do that. And this album, to me, was such a fun ride as a result of that, because it was true human emotion and true pettiness. Like, the point is, she's not really a villain. She's good and bad. Like, we're all good and bad. We're all good and petty. And so is Tay in this situation. Like, and that is what it leads me to, is that this is a very human record. It's a very petty record sometimes. It's a very lovey record. It's a very insecure record. It's a very, why are you doing that, Taylor record? But it's very human coming from such a godlike pop star. And that's ultimately like why I love it so much and why I had such a fun time with it.
I can agree with that. I mean, there's no disputing it. I guess I'd rather have a petty Taylor Swift album than a sugar-coated everything's gonna be okay album and nothing bad ever happens in the world. But I just expect a little bit more from someone who has the kind of platform that she does. And I'm not even going into politics here.
Right.
I just think
We probably should.
But,
but we're not gonna.
But all that aside, I think that she could exist above all of this and still be able to call out the bullshit.
I want to make a prediction here. I think the song Dress is going to be a smash hit.
I fucking hate that song.
That chorus, man. I mean, you're going back to like Blank Space and Style.
Those songs are so much better than that song.
That chorus, man. I have a prediction that's going to be a hit. I think we'd be having a whole different conversation about, you know, performance of this album. I think the singles probably should have been This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things and or Endgame. I think one of those two should have been the lead single. And there would have been much more interesting conversation around this album. Whereas Look What You Made Me Do, which I love that song now, it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way at first, you know?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I like Look What You Made Me Do, too. I've said it on past episodes, and I said it earlier on this one, but ultimately
it didn't do what it was supposed to do.
Sure.
As a lead single.
Sure. I'll agree. Endgame should have been a single, but they were definitely saving that one for the album push. They send it to radio on Friday.
I love that song, man. It is the thesis. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
The second I heard it, the whole rest of the album clicked.
Definitely. But I will say, there's a lot of this album that I don't like.
That's so interesting.
I hate Getaway Car. I think that is her Carly Rae Jepsen wannabe 80s, you know, pitchfork trying type song. And I fucking hate it.
That's funny. For me, I found Getaway Car to be the most likely song to fit in on 1989. It sounds like it could fit right in there. With Blank Space and Style, you know, and it's all about relationship hopping, kind of just like Blank. It's thematically, it's just like 1989. And I thought
it just has that 80s vibe that I can't stand. And I know, Pitchfork readers are drooling over that song.
Yeah.
I did not like Dress. I thought that chorus is just straight up annoying. New Year's Day was a throwaway track.
Okay, New Year's Day is interesting because it sort of serves as the after the party song, you know? First off, it's the only song we hear prominent guitar on, so that's worth shouting. I think there's a little bit of a classic line called I Want Your Midnights that will probably be a tattoo. You know, it'll probably be a fan favorite line. I don't think it's a good song either. It's my least favorite song on the album, but she paints a very pretty picture with lyrics like there's glitter on the floor after the party, candle wax and Polaroids on the hardwood floor. This is the come down track from this wild ride we've just been on. And I think it does serve a decent purpose as the closer.
Okay, you can have that argument. I can't stand Don't Blame Me. I feel like the record really starts to fade right there. I don't like Delicate. It picks up with Look What You Made Me Do and So It Goes. Gorgeous is still
terrible.
Don't
like Delicate. One of my favorite songs on the album, man.
It's a miss.
It's a Lord song, so I guess it makes sense why.
I guess.
Lord is not for everyone. It literally has that thumping chorus that we heard on Lord Sober, you know?
Right.
It's very similar.
Gorgeous still is should gorgeous. Never have been a single. at all.
I've even come around on gorgeous a little though. Like I'm like, all right, I'll let you slide. I don't love it, but I'm like, I'll let you play out. I won't skip. I won't hit the skip. You know,
that is absolutely ridiculous. King of My Heart, I have notes about it. I couldn't tell you what that song sounds like. I was listening to this album over and over and over and trying to focus in on that song. So forgettable.
It's another song straight up about sex, which there are a few of those on here. It's another Lorde moment for her. She literally, go listen to the second verse after this. She mimics Lorde's voice, which is a weird thing to hear Taylor do, but I actually really like that song a lot. It's like a 7.5 out of 10 for me.
Are her and Lorde, did they reconvene their friendship? Are they cool?
Lorde didn't tweet about the album.
Okay.
So I don't know.
All right, you know? That's a little
But I think by virtue of working with Jack,
it's Jack
and what Jack picked off from Lorde, I think it's just a lot has spilled over here.
That asshat ruined a potentially great album.
You got any more bones to pick?
I don't think so. I think I went through every song on the album. I'm
Have
literally
we talked about every song?
I'm about 50-50 on this entire album.
What is your favorite song on the record?
It's definitely either between So It Goes or Dancing With Our Hands Tied. I bounce back and forth between both those songs. I've had them both on repeat today, and I like them both for different reasons because they're completely different songs, but they both have that ambient, ethereal kind of vibe to them, so I think that's why I like them. But right now, I gotta go with So It Goes, and I love Endgame. Ready For It's great. It's probably the best opener on an album in 2017.
Just the stomp of that bass.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, as an opener, wow. I mean, I just re-experienced that song in a whole new way. But okay, so I gotta say this. I think it's the best Taylor Swift album to date.
I wish it was, because aesthetically, I love this album. I'm glad that the Poptimism era is over, but I think 1989 is a better album.
For me, both sonically, there's just so much more interesting things going on here. It's thrashy. It's in your face. It's aggressive. It's all over the place. It's wild. It's electronic. Sonically, I love this album. Thematically, it feels way more deep to me. Whether that depth be pettiness or whatever, I feel real human emotion here. Whereas 1989 felt sort of distant to me. Is 1989 the only record you would put over this, or would you put Red over this too?
It's close to Red, just because I feel like there's so many misses on this album.
And it's not fair to compare old Taylor to new Taylor. I think we're just talking new Taylor. Red, 1989, and this. Because the country pop stuff, that's a whole...
Right.
It's a different artist, right?
It's a different era. Yeah, you can't compare these two.
But so you're kind of... This is tied with Red for you?
Kinda, yeah. I'm around that. I might put it up against it now, underneath 1989, and put Red in third right now, just because it's so fresh. But I think, as history goes on, I think it might be the last of the new era albums from Taylor.
Okay. And I don't think you're going to agree with me here, but I got to say, I think this is the best pop album of the year.
No.
And I think it could be, I think it even, this might be a hard reset for pop music in the same way that Justin Bieber's Purpose was. I think we might see a lot of emulation coming off this one, the same way Biebercore is now a thing.
I just don't know, man. It's interesting. We didn't get a straight up EDM chorus on this album, and I thought that was, you know, Are You Ready For It is kind of the closest we got, but that almost leads more in towards SoundCloud rap.
She's doing, you know, SoundCloud rap, Fergie. R&B,
she covers a lot of ground. Totally.
Thrash. I mean, some of the stuff is just some songs are just thrash songs, but not with guitars. You know, she's just all over the place. So, all right, Tyler, this was a Team Katie podcast. Is it still a Team Katie podcast?
Oh man,
because
in 2017, I don't think we can call it a Team Katie podcast,
because the Katy Perry album was so bad, right?
And it was a flop.
And a flop. And this album washes Katie. And Katie didn't even need to be washed. Katie washed herself, right? With how bad an album she put out. And it's funny, Katie is such a minor target on this record. Like, she, you know, mostly it's Kanye. Katie, I think, is only really even referenced in the song. What was the fourth single we got? Was it So It Goes, or
Call It What You Want?
call it what you want. She references all of her enemies who are keeping receipts. And that's a line in Swish Swish where Katie says, you know, I keep receipts from all the bad things you've done to me, Taylor. And she also references in that same song, all the drama queens taking their swings, which is a reference at Nicki Minaj and Katy Perry. But that's it. You know, Katie, Taylor's like, you washed yourself, girl. I don't even have to, you know, put any work, really. Katie's just not even a central villain on this record. So I don't know, man. Like, I really love this record. I really hated that Katie record. I was really disappointed with what Katie did to me this year, you know? The rollout was so much better of this, you know, the physical, instead of what did Katy Perry do? Like, she made a pie or some shit, and Taylor did the magazine thing and the hardcover, and I don't know. Are you feeling Team Katy still?
In 2017, I'm absolutely Team Taylor. 100%. It's not even a question.
So we're defecting.
But
I'm with you on this.
Okay.
I'll defect with you. Katy, to be Team Katy again, she has to make another Prism and win us back,
yes,
you know?
Yes, absolutely.
I thought Prism was better than 1989, you know? I don't, you know, I think this album is far superior to Witness. It's not even a question.
Not even
Katy
close.
Is the true queen of pop right now, in my opinion.
It looks like she might
not Katy,
be
I'm sorry, Taylor.
Outselling Katy by almost, I don't know what the final total is going to be.
It's not even a competition.
But it looks like she's going to outsell her by well over a million copies first week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well over. Projections have projections have Taylor selling around 1.4 million first week. I think she did 700,000 the first day.
First day.
You know, which that's already more than Katy did first week. Katy only did like 100 and something, 180,000.
Yep.
So, all right. Anything else you want to touch on with this album, Tyler?
We got to give a rating, man.
Oh, the rating. What is your score, Tyler?
I'm at a 6.
6. I am at an 8.9.
Dang. This is getting close to album of the year contender for you, man.
You know, my album of the year placeholder was Science Fiction by Brand New. I'm going to be real.
Same.
And I don't know about that anymore, you know?
Not anymore.
I think I take that one out of the conversation. And so that kind of puts this into my album of the year contender category.
That's crazy.
I'm at an 8.9 out of 10.
Can't wait to do those episodes. It's coming up.
Yep. All right. Well, that is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions, feel free to write into notescene@gmail.com. Please leave us a rating or a review on iTunes if you get the chance. We will see you next week.